All right, welcome everybody. Tonight is January 6th, 2024. Okay, tonight I believe is the eighth lecture in the series of, I guess, starting with the French Revolution. And tonight I wanted to open up with, I think very fascinating to see the beginnings of I called tonight Israel Jacobson and the Father of Reform. Okay, so I guess in Reform circles or in the world, Israel Jacobson is referred to as the Father of Reform. He was he was the first major reformer, and he was there were many Maskilim at the time. The Maskilim was still a minority. More people were becoming, let's say, more modern and less religious, but he was one that was going to try. He was going to be the one to bring more people into this idea of a new, or let's say, to update or modernize the Jewish religion. And he's going to do it. He's dangerous. He did a lot, and he knew how to do things. So let's just start, just a little bit about his background. Israel Jacobson, born in 1768. He was born in Halberstadt. He received an Orthodox education. He also did not go to, let's say, a university. So even though he considered himself a maskil, an educated, secular, rounded education, but he never really had a formal education. He considered himself in the camp of the Maskilim, and he was the one that felt that that was the way for Judaism to go. He was brought up religious, firm, and it seems a little bit of reading. He even considered going into the rabbinate, but he didn't. So what was he was definitely influenced by Mendelssohn and his writings, and was attracted to the Haskalah movement. I guess he felt that that was the... he didn't have a secular education. He married a lady, Mink, who was the daughter of Hertz Samson. Now, Hertz Samson, he started a school for poor people, a Jewish school for Jews. Originally, it was a religious school, and basically it became a maskil school. Zunz was a big maskil. He was one of the first students. He was taken over by a maskil, and he took all the students that were there and basically changed the whole curriculum. It was mainly for who went there. It was underfunded. It was poor kids went there. And when it was taken over by the Maskilim, they upgraded the Ruchnius, they upgraded the Gashmius, and they changed the entire schedule to be more in line with the Maskilim's, how they would want to be taught. And it was funded by Mr. Samson's son-in-law, Israel Jacobson. When his father-in-law died, now his father-in-law was the court agent of the Duchy of Brunswick. I think his name is Ferdinand. When his father-in-law died, he took over for him, and he became the district rabbi for the Western region, and he became administrative agent for Charles Ferdinand of Brunswick. That he became fabulously wealthy. You have to remember, 1795, We're already 6 years into the French Revolution, 6 years before Napoleon becomes the king, or takes over the government, and like there's already two coalitions against France, you know, and this is, there's war in Europe, and when there's war, there's a need for money and an army and paying off armies. So Jacobson is going to be very, very helpful in terms of first lending money and second of all getting supplies, selling supplies. So if you're the court Jew, so you know you would you'd be very helpful to your patron in getting things going. So he became very, very, very wealthy. Bernadette, this is where Brunswick is, this area. This would be Germany, and that area would be Brunswick. Okay, did I go backwards? No. Okay, again, he was influenced by Moses Mendelssohn, even though he himself didn't have a secular education, he felt the best way of changing everybody is through education. And that's, he opened up this, he paid for the school, the Samson School, and he opened up a school in Sisson. And that was like his school, and that was his idea on promoting reform, what's going to be called reform. Now, what was the difference between Jacobson and Moses Mendelssohn? So it was a big difference. First of all, Moses Mendelssohn is a little earlier, but Jacobson is called the father of reform, even though Moses Mendelssohn was not considered the father of reform. We may consider him the father of reform, but Jacobson looked like at Moses Mendelssohn, how he lived his life, and he felt, Jacobson felt, that's what we want. We want everybody to live their life that way. Mendelssohn himself wasn't into getting people and saying, hey, why don't you go do this and go to university, and he wasn't so into Kirov, what do you call it, trying to get everybody to do like what he's doing. He did his thing. Most of his life he was, his main job is in the circles that he was in. He was like a apologist for the Jews, and he defended the Jews and the Jewish religion among these other philosophers and these German academics. That was Mendelssohn. He himself was personally religious, but he never forced his religion on anybody else. He had a philosophy, and he did want people to be more acculturated. That's one of his, Mendelssohn's main reason for writing a translation of the Bible in a very polished German, so they could do two things at the same time. They could learn the Bible and learn German, right? But his idea was never even thought of opening up schools and in a new educational way or encouraging people in mass. Jacobson, he started schools and he opened shuls, and he's going to use, and this is where the French Revolution comes in, he's going to use the consistory in Westphalia, which is going to be a section of Germany that Napoleon is going to sort of annex to France and put his brother Jerome as the king. And Jerome, we're going to talk about this maybe we'll get to it later, but Israel Jacobson is going to use the Westphalia, this new government is gonna push for and make a consistory just like they had in France, And there he's going to force all the Jews to do like he did. But before we get there, I think I wanted to just first start with his school in Sisson, because in his school, you get a real picture of what he was and what he thought. So in 1801, he opened up in a small town of Sisson, he opened up a school for the children of the poor, which became known as the, I don't know how to say it in Germany, Religions Industrie Schule. Okay, today is known as Jacob's Gymnasium. And in 1805, it was so successful, his school, that in 1805, some Christian kids wanted to go to the school. So they, you know, like they want to go to yeshiva, you know, like it was such a, so he accepted a few Christian kids. Okay, this is today. This is, if you went there today, this is called the Jacobson Gymnasium in Sisson.
Okay? That's the operation.
This is today. This was his shul that he built, his school and shul. I guess next to it, this probably was the school and the shul.
Is still open and it's over 150 years?
I guess if there is a school there, it's nothing to do with Jews. It's probably in the place. This is what today.
It looks modern enough.
It was rebuilt. This was destroyed by the Nazis, so they didn't discriminate between Reform, Conservative. They just destroyed everybody. Here's Sisson on the map, and you'll see another picture. We'll see more of what he did, what he changed, and everything. The synagogue in Sisson, which is called Jacob's Temple, was inaugurated in 1810. Mind you, the Westphalia Kingdom was in 1808. So really, the consistory goes first, and during this change, under the Jerome Bonaparte, this is under the French control of Germany, all this happened. Today, it was inaugurated in 1810, the Reform was first synagogue. It had a bell tower, which nobody, not even any other Reform shul ever did. There was one other Reform shul which was thinking of maybe making a bell tower, they didn't do it. So the only
shul... What's the significance of the bell tower?
Bell tower is very Christian.
Oh.
Churches have bell towers. Jews did not. So the fact that he was able to put a bell tower on top of his shul and school was like, you know, radical of radical. Also inside, it had an organ, and it really looked like a Protestant church.
Whoa.
You know, this was the, up in front, there was a, he moved the beamer to the front, and he had, there was a big, well, we have that today on most of our shuls, but there was a big aisle down the middle. That was all to copy what a Protestant church would look like, and it was okay. The starting point for the reforms were the efforts undertaken as the president of the church authority, which is probably the consistory. Founded in 1808, the Kingdom of Westphalia, Jacob's modernizations were accompanied by religious service reforms, and these were soon discarded. The synagogue built on the grounds of Jacobson's school was destroyed in 1938 in the pogroms. That's Kristallnacht. It was destroyed. Okay, attached to the school is a prayer room. That's what you really saw with the bells. See, so it's half a dozen Jewish families. So he had a shul there for the students and for the families as well. 1805 to 1810, Jacob built one of Germany's first Reformed temples. It had a typical Reform innovations. Beamer was set up in the front. Again, a lot of these renovations also, what I mentioned last week, we spoke about Rabbi Granblum in Holland. They had in Amsterdam, there was the Maskil break-off from the Minyan, and they made a lot of these changes, and he copied those changes. When the consistory came about, in Amsterdam, they voted the shul out of existence. So that's where you see where the consistory was used to keep the from, you know, to keep the establishment,
Orthodox.
But here, it was the opposite. It was Jacob's, and that was the consistory, and he used the consistory to push forth reform. Okay, Bima was up in front, and Organ was installed. Now, the second synagogue in Organ in Europe first had been installed in Prague Synagogue during the 19th century. Now, it's a little misleading, because I was checking up about this second organ. This organ was put into another shul. It was never used on Shabbos. It was used sometimes Erev Shabbos, but they stopped playing the organ a full half an hour before Shabbos. So whenever it was, and when it broke, they didn't fix it. So it was never used in any type of Shabbos or service. Maybe, I guess sounds like maybe it was used for a Kabbalah Shabbos if it was early enough. Okay, but here, they're going to use the organ on Shabbos. Of course, in the beginning, it's played by a goy, so chas v'shalom. We shouldn't, be machal Shabbos. But again, this is part of the reform thing, because everything was just a little bit at a time. So probably just before I just go further, just what Jacobson's, all the reformers, the Maskilim, which Jacobson felt he was part of, they really had two agendas. One agenda was to get accepted by the non-Jews, because we're upgrading, we're modernizing our religion, we don't do things that are silly and superstitious and things that don't make sense. That was one thing. And also, there were a lot of Jews that were already becoming modern, less religious, and you want to keep a hold on them. So if they don't feel comfortable in a very religious shul, so you make some changes. So in this way, you're able to keep them connected. So that was the twofold idea: keep modern Jews or less religious Jews connected, and also try to get acceptance from the non-Jews. The organ that the third thing it says over here: Jacobson topped his structure with a small bell tower, which you've seen. Nobody ever had that. He coined a place of worship, a temple. Is a term commonly used in France to designate any house of prayer, emphasizing Jacob's philosophy that Judaism is merely one religion among many. I'd like to quote you a speech of his. You'll see that so clearly. But also, I also heard an idea that the reason why the Reforms called it a temple is because they didn't believe in Mashiach and didn't believe that they're not going back. We're not going, this is it. This is where we are in Germany, and this is where we belong. And therefore, we're replacing the temple in Jerusalem by our temple here. And that's why, I guess even today, a reform shul, a synagogue, whatever, place of prayer, I don't know what you call it, is called the temple.
Right.
Okay, so that's the, right, so, and they had a hard time in reform when, in 1948, when the State of Israel was coming about. Because they had to, on the one hand, no, we're in our host country and we're not going in yet. Israel was forming. Uh-oh. Like, well, what's with our whole philosophy? But, and it took them a while to get aboard. They eventually did get aboard supporting the state and everything, but it wasn't, we have records of the reform movement in America not supporting the Zionists, because again, this is our temple. This is where we are. We're not going back.
We're happy where we are.
We're happy where we are.
They used to call for living in Jerusalem.
And right. And that's which Rav was it? The Meshech Chachma, when he has the Dvar Torah. He writes, woe are those that call Berlin Jerusalem. Mm. And just. He sort of predicts like the terrible things would happen among them. Okay, so Jacobson saw the Seisen Temple as his success, as his, that was his best thing that could ever come about, was his shul, his school, his shul, and this was, he felt, was his achievement, his crowning achievement, and that's what, he made a dedication, which was, he made a massive dedication and a speech, and that's really what I wanted to, this over here just tells what it was all about, but I just wanted to, there was a paper called the Sulamith. Sulamith was, it was a maskil paper, a paper put out by these maskilim, these non-religious, and the purpose of the Sulamith was to have, you know, people who wanted to identify something with Judaism, they would have a paper that they could read, you know, and they would have ideas and questions, and they said, well, we'll take from everybody, religious want to, you know, and non-religious, and this will be the paper where any ideas will be accepted, and that's the purpose of it, but that's what the paper was. But again, the main idea was to keep these non-affiliated Jews connected to Judaism, so they'll have something to read, and, you know, thoughts and ideas about Jewish thoughts and ideas, things that won't necessarily be threatening to them. They won't feel, you know, they have to keep a fine line. They can't make it too Jewish, but if they're not going to make it Jewish enough, then what, you know, then. But that was their goal, and it was for many years, and I think that every so often it stopped, and then after a few years, the paper started up again. So this is an article in Sulamith, and it's 18, what do we say, it was 1808, or 1810, and it was at the dedication of the school of Seisen. I think the school was already probably for over a year or so, but he made a dedication. And this is how the paper is reporting it. Of course, the paper is reporting it as if it's the best thing in the world to ever happen. Hundreds of persons who had been invited came from Brunswick, Kassel, Halberstadt, Göttingen, Goslar, Helmstedt, and all surrounding places. If you want to know where they looked on a map, it was here, the different areas. This is where Seisen is on the map. And like you can see, they probably invited people from different areas. I don't know how far these places are from one another. You know, probably it looks like from a car, like maybe an hour or two or whatever. But this is where he got, where they came. Most of them had arrived in Seisen the previous day, the 16th of July. Some of them lodged in the ample buildings of the president of Jacobson. And others, if there was not enough room, was put in the inn, all corresponded by Mr. Jacobson. In the evening, he entertained everyone for dinner. In the day of the dedication itself, the 17th of July, 7 a.m. in the morning, lovely music resounded from the roof of the temple, which was flat like a platform, and announced to the city the approaching festivities. At 8 o'clock, all who had come to participate in the festivities assembled in the school hall of the well-known educational institution which President Jacobson had founded in Seisen.
Would that dinner have been kosher?
Huh?
Would that dinner have been kosher?
You know what? I don't know. But doesn't say, it probably was. You know, again, you know, I don't, it's in the very beginning, and for all we know is Mr. Jacobson himself could have been Shomer Shabbos or to whatever degree. I guess we'll see, I don't know. I'm guessing it probably was back then. Eventually they're gonna, you know, one thing after another. We'll see, the reform is gonna form some sort of a committee or an organization, and all these small little maskilim are gonna come together, and they're gonna, you know, become a force. That's basically what they're gonna do. One could see persons of distinguished rank, scholars, Jewish, Protestant, and Catholic clergymen, they're all invited, officials, businessmen of all kinds, all walking together in complete concord and uniform tolerance seemed to permeate all members of this numerous company. here, friends met acquaintances and comrades from university days who had not seen each other for a long time and found each other unexpectedly here. Manifold in different groups in this large assembly were most interesting. Everyone found something to talk about. Again, this is how the paper is you know.
I'm reading something about this right now. It says that he performed this service in this little synagogue in the bell tower in a Episcopal clergyman's type.
Oh, yeah, that's, yeah, they, yeah.
That was what they
right.
did.
Right, one of the things that they did is, all of them, it was all these Reform rabbis, they put on these clergy because we're going to see, hopefully I'll get to, that even a, I think it was a Reb Bing, who was again, a real chashuv rav, who, in order to counteract this, also put on the robes, you know, so then, but he was like from through and through, and, but he put on the robes, so once they're wearing robes already, you know, to take away a certain, like,
difference.
You know, right, a certain difference, a certain, like, advantage that they had. Okay, it's the robes, now wearing the robes too, you know.
And they think about their robes from our priests anyway. It's their styles were all, they said, go on, we take a look.
Yeah, okay, whatever, right, could be. At 9 o'clock, the ringing bells announced that the ceremonies would begin. Someone explained in a loud voice how the procession from the hall to the temple would take place. What the celebration itself would consist of. Thereafter, everyone began the solemn processional under the ringing of bells. The procession was led by two flags and the
Which two flags?
Of Jacobson Institution and the teachers. I don't know, but it could be the flags of Westphalia. I would guess one of the flags would have been maybe both of Westphalia. He also made a, we'll see later, he commemorated a coin, Jacobson, and for Westphalia, for the freedom of all the Jews. And he had like a symbol in the front and the back, so maybe it could be something there. It could be a flag of Sisson. I don't know. It doesn't say. Two flags, and it was led by the students of the Jacobson Institute. Then followed President Jacobson, the prefect of the departments of Oakland, Mr. Hannenberg, and the clerics and lay members of the Israelite consistory from Castle. So this was the consistory was already the religious part of the government that is responsible, that's holding all the synagogues responsible of following the new laws of the government. Okay, so we're gonna, but just they were there. We will come back to what happened. Then came all the rabbis present, walking in pairs, clerical robes, and Christian clergymen similarly. I'm sure the rabbis that were there were not from the Orthodox camp. Mm. And if they were like, you know, they themselves who may have been more modern. Okay. The mayor of the town, the deputy mayor came in their robes, Count of Braybeck, Rabbi, public officials who all were present, and all other invited persons appeared in their best clothing. Finally, there came many other people from all places, all faith, who had come from the entire surroundings to observe the festivities. In solemn silence, the long procession went from the auditorium of the school to the halls, through the doors, into the street, and again through the doors of another house, and through this house into the court of the temple. Special admission cards had been printed for this festival in order to preserve order, and they had been distributed among the participants in the procession. Okay, after the procession had entered the temple proper, they came from the organ, soft, lovely music by 60 to 70 musicians and singers. All this put all hearts in the most solemn mood. After everyone had taken their seats, a cantata, composed especially for the celebration by Dr. Heinroth, one of the teachers in the Jacobson Institute, was sung splendidly for the accompaniment of the rousing sound of the instruments. Huh? Yeah. Oh, he thought of everything. On today, boy, the Jewish ritual now began, with Mr. Jacobson himself being the chief officiant and the rabbis assisting him. At the end, President Jacobson gave an address, which we will print further on an excerpt. I want to go through that because you really get a sense of what he holds. After the scrolls of the Torah, which were elaborately ornamented, had been taken from the Ark of Great Ceremony, they were carried around the temple seven times, preceded by boys with burning wax candles. I don't know what the all that significance is, but I guess they felt that's how you do a procession. Again, he's trying to copy the non-Jews.
Because there was no electricity yet.
Huh?
Was there
okay. No. Yeah, Kafis and maybe right. or maybe Yericho. I don't know why, but again, this is how he felt his ceremony should be.
But with the candles also, I was thinking more of a wedding.
Yeah, maybe a wedding. Oh, could be. Okay. Again, you could read whatever you want into this. Several chapters of the Pentateuch, I guess that's the Dvarim, were read first in Hebrew and then at once in German.
For
the five books, okay? The Bible. Publicly and with a loud voice, Mr. Schott, director of the Educational Institute, and mounted the rostrum and talked to the assembled multitude. Then came a chorale accompanied by organ and full orchestra, and this was sung first in Hebrew and then also in German. At the end of this song, in the singing of which the Christians and Israelites participated with deep emotion, church counselor Heinemann delivered an address. I guess church counselor, I guess he's consistory. Befitting the occasion, after this address, there were further songs sung by the choir. The temple was richly and tastefully illuminated. The architectural beauty, its decorations and gilded pieces visible on all sides to the eye, the graceful columns and antique chandeliers, the flower garlands which hung everywhere, the colorful mixture of people, and this presented a most beautiful and interesting view. At the end of the service, President Jacobson elaborately entertained at a table of 200 in his school auditorium, and adjoining rooms for 70 musicians, and other rooms for an additional 100 persons. The students of the Institute ate in the open in the courtyard. Okay, that was basically what it looked like. So you see who's he trying
big
to impress.
Big party.
Huh? It's a big party. He has a certain idea on how his religious, you
to
know.
Include everybody.
Well, but, right. Now you can see who he's going to speaking to as well. But his idea was to be, I guess, to emulate, to be like you said, I think it was a very telling, the sister religion is not like anybody, you know, like we're different than, no, we're all the same, you know, you have one. Okay. Now, festivities were original and unique. Where would one, this is the paper saying, where would one have seen a similar day in which Jews and Christians celebrated together in a common service, in the presence of more than 40 clergymen of both religions, and even sat down to eat and rejoice together in an intimate company. Okay. Now this, what we're gonna hear now is what he said. So when you listen, read what he's, this is public, his address, this was his main thing. This was his, he felt his main achievement in life was the school and the shul and the beginning. You know, he's gonna do more. He's not done here, but at least this is his beginning. He felt that this is what was necessary. It had been left to the tolerance of our days to bring about and to make possible that which only a little while ago would have appeared impossible. In building this edifice, it had not been my intent to bring about a complete religious unification of all religions. Oh, it wasn't? I guess when people realize people are going to criticize somebody about something, so you say that this is not what I'm doing.
Right.
Somehow it helps, right? So it is not my intention to bring about a complete religious unification of all religions. One accomplishes nothing at all if one desires everything or too much at one time. What is needed is gradual and slow development as is demonstrated by nature itself, when it brings forth its greater spiritual and physical accomplishments. So in other words, he does seem to be telling you, we can't do it all today, we can't become Christians today, but slowly but surely we can move in that direction.
He wants to create something new.
Right.
He wants to take it where they give up a little.
Well, I don't know, but they're giving up a little. They're not giving up anything.
I realize it is mine.
Yeah, okay. Any diversions from this wise procedure of our common mother nature, which human stubbornness or frivolity might suggest, would only be followed by failures, or even by the very opposite of what was desired. What I had in mind when I first thought about building this temple was your religious education. I guess it's true, but my Israelite brothers, your customs, your worship, etc. Be it far from me that I should have any secret intention to undermine the pillars of your faith. So I guess he wants to take that faith and just change it. It's his idea, that's it, and it's all. But again, he's trying to say in the beginning, this is not what I'm doing. Don't think I'm trying to take you away from your faith, even though he will be, but that's not what my intention is. To diminish our old grand honor principles through the glitter of new opinions, or that because of some hidden vanity, I should become a traitor to both our religion and you. That's not me. You know my faithful adherence to the faith of my fathers. I need not protest it. My actions will witness for me more than my words. I guess he feels like he's
sounding
religious
like
enough.
An evangelist.
Yeah. But if I do seek care for some reapproachment between you and our Christian neighbors, I would ask more for your gratitude and honest help than for your criticism or even opposition. For your true and progressive enlightenment depends upon this reproachment. On it depends the education of your spirit for true religiosity, and at the same time also your future greater political work. Okay, that's he's telling him what he wants from everybody. Don't argue with me.
He's also very wealthy.
He could never have gotten this far without all his money.
Right.
Yeah, listen to this. Is how, who would dare to deny that our service is sickly? Okay, that's a starting point. He's like, that's a given in his mind. You know, we were reading things in Hebrew, and we were reading things, it's many times over, we're saying the same thing. Nobody understands what's going on. Nobody, it's just, you know, things are being done in customs don't make sense anymore, and therefore we gotta change it to make it more exciting. Okay, so instead of like learning more and understanding what the davening is, let's water it down to what we are. Who would dare to deny that our service is sickly because of the many useless things that in part has degenerated into thoughtless recitation of prayers and formulae, that it kills devotion more than encourages it, and that it limits our religious principles to that fund of knowledge which for centuries had remained in our treasure houses without increase and without ennoblement. On all sides, enlightenment opens up new ideas for development. Why should we alone remain behind? Okay, enlightenment is that's what that's, you know.
The irony is that a lot of young people who have been part of the form and conservative movement become poor people, in part because going to their synagogues has left them feeling empty and disconnected from anything meaningful.
Right.
And then they
usually it goes the other way. It goes once you. This is just a stepping stone for nothing.
Right. And then when they come to like a firm situation where they're brought in the right environment, they connect fully to all the things he says we don't have.
Right. Good. Yeah. Let us be honest, my brothers. Our ritual is still weighted down with religious customs which must be rightfully offensive to reason as well as to our Christian friends. Again, this is the two people he's trying to impress. One, the religious Christians, we are just like you, we're just a sister religion, and to people that are more modern and went to university and are maskilim and they have rational thought, they see things, and what is this? It's archaic, it doesn't make sense. It desecrates the holiness of our religion and dishonors the reasonable man to place too great a value upon such customs. And on the other hand, he is greatly honored if he can increasingly encourage himself and his friends to realize the dispensability. You know, you're a great person. You're greater when you realize you can get rid of this than not. Our ecclesiastical office, our religious office, which is the Israelite consistory, which he is the president of. That's his day job, right? Right, is willing
we'll
to help us. Is willing to help us and greatly concerned with the improvement of our synagogues and schools. In other words, basically, I'm going to push this, you know, from the consistory on everybody else. It spreads more correct principles abroad and will, without partisanship, do the best for us. Even at the moment, we cannot see the flowers or the fruits of these efforts. Even though you don't get it, how good it is for you, I'm telling you, it will be. This is okay. And you, my highly honored other friends, who in the name, who in name and in some aspects are different from my faith. I hope I have the full agreement of your sympathetic hearts in the principles I have set forth of the intent of this temple building and of the hope for a happier future for my compatriots. There's nothing in this intent that in any way contradicts the principles of pure religion, of the demands of general morality, of reason, or of your own humanitarian attitude. No, I didn't say anything that you disagree with. We're all on the same page. I trust, therefore, that you will be far from receiving my brothers coldly. I trust that you will not reject them, as did your forebears, only too often, but rather that you will accept them with love into the circle of your society and business, that you will solicitously stretch out your hand to us in that rapprochement which I have sketched in its ideological outline, and for the sake of which, partially, I have dedicated this temple. Accept, therefore, my deepest and most devoted thanks for your warm interest in this rare celebration, which you have so obviously manifested to me and my friends through your precious presence and through expression of your sentiments. Yeah, thanks. Thank you for coming. And by the fact that you're here, you show, wow, that you agree with me, and we're going to all do this together.
Yeah.
And this is what, and thou, O God, whose mighty hand has lifted up our people once again after such a long debasement, just as it happened once after a long imprisonment, thou, O God, whose goodness has made it possible to complete the work of several years and bring it to a happy ending. Grant unto us further, we pray, that we might sense the glorious traces of thy love and thy benevolence and thy protection, both in the faith of our compatriots and the results of this temple building. But with this confidence, let us not be guilty of the indolence of delay. Oh, we got to do this quickly. Don't, like, you know. Of the embarrassment of indecisiveness and the mystical hope of the superstitious, and merely hope for divine assistance. May we be conscious of our dignity, never forget man, our destiny, a being whom thou hast gifted with reason and freedom, that he may think for himself, act for himself, and whom thou didst destined not to be a soulless machine in the plan of thy creation. Let us never despair of the good cause of religion and mankind. Let us not lose heart. New obstacles will be thrust across our path when we find that any beginning, like the uplifting enlightenment of this first people, can proceed, but slowly and with many difficulties, can mature only after centuries. Again, you're saying, Hashem, please help that I should be successful. Above all, O God, make us vividly conscious that we are brothers with all adherents of other divine teachings. Again, that's what he viewed himself. No different than Christians, or that we are descendants of one humanity which adores thee as their common father, that we are brothers who must learn love and gentle tolerance, brothers finally who under thy guidance walk towards a common goal, and who in the end, when the mist will have been dispelled from before our eyes and all the errors gone from our spirit and all doubts removed from our reason, will meet each other on one and the same road. Amen. Anyway, this is what he was saying. So you see where he's starting. You see this is his goal. This is his ambition, is to make the Jewish people like the Christian religion, like modern,
and accepted
by them, and just things, you know, anything that has customs that we have, everything we do is really beautiful. And, you know, when you start to think of everything that was and why we do things, it's really a beautiful thing that we have. But he doesn't get that. To him, it doesn't mean anything, and therefore discard it. Let's get rid of it. You know, and how would the Christians, how do they look at us at this? You know, so that was in his temple. Jacobson, all references to the Mashiach was abolished. Shabbos observance, it wasn't. So you asked me, was he Shomer Shabbos? I don't know, maybe references to it. Separation between men and women. It could be that they sat together, or maybe on one side or the other. Head coverings for men, that eventually went. And also they didn't daven every day. They eventually only davened on Shabbos. Even King Jerome complained that the radical place of worship threatened to split the Jews of his kingdom into two camps. You could imagine the religion of the Frum, the Orthodox, they did not want to have anything regularly to do with this. Okay.
What is it coming from, the idea of Mashiach is not coming?
Because they held, that's it, we're not going back. All these sacrifices and everything, that was ancient, that's archaic, that's barbaric.
Plus the Christians said it was.
We have nothing, you know, we that's not what we are. We are here to serve God, you know, in a more modern, you know, reasonable understanding. And that's it, that was all, that's it, it's gone. As a matter of fact, when they're going to, he doesn't come up with a sitter, but there's going to be a different Reformed temple, which we'll probably get to next week. They're going to change the sitter, and it's going to cause a big machlokus to go on. What's going to be in Germany between the Frum and the not Frum, and
those ideas are coming from him, or he learned from?
Great question. It's probably it's probably like the ideas of the times. You know, I don't think he was too much of an intellectual as he was a doer. You know, he was a shaker and a, what do they call him?
A mover and a shaker. It said he was confirmed as a Hebrew scholar through some study that he did.
He did learn when he was younger, but it wasn't like he went to a university.
I think Mendelssohn was one of his.
His mentor, right, he probably read a little bit about Mendelssohn, but he never had a formal advanced education. He went into the business world very soon, so okay, whatever learning he could do on the side.
Not that I know that was from the Christian religion, but didn't Protestantism do the same thing?
Yeah.
So isn't he basically just following that?
Could be. He's following something. But
this is the whole idea of reform in general in France and all around Europe.
Right.
That everyone was trying to be enlightened and, you know, get rid of the old.
Right. And in their new enlightened state, now they're re-examining the Jewish religion. And in their own minds, it's just, they don't understand it. Not that they ever really learned it and then said, well, it doesn't make sense. They're looking at it from the outside, from a non-Jewish intellectual position. Now they're looking at it. This is almost like Mendelssohn, you know, looking at it from the outside and saying, God, that doesn't make sense. That doesn't know. Why are you doing this? Why are you doing this? Well, you know, you have to understand it. And that's where, Mr. Shum will get to it, that's where Hirsch came in. Because Shamsul Raphael Hirsch, he took everything, all the advantages of the modern society, and he said, now let's look at Torah. Don't look at the Torah as if Goyim would look at the Torah and you don't understand it. Let's learn the Torah from the inside. Mm-hmm. Now with our rational, modern understanding and intellect, now you'll see how beautiful the Torah is. And the philosophy of the Torah, he's gonna move it from the other side. So I guess next week I'd like to talk about the empire of Westphalia, how Napoleon went ahead and created from Germany all these like city states, as you could see, you saw before, all like the little. And he's going to make an empire out of it, give it to his brother Jerome, which we referenced today. And from there, there's going to be notables, and almost like he's going to follow the line of what happened in France. So what happened in France and how Napoleon himself dealt with the Jews, now it's going to happen again in Westphalia, and Jacobson is there. He is going to be in charge. And he is now going to take his philosophy, what you see there, and he's going to push it onto the Jewish people. So you see, without the French Revolution, Jacobson would have ended up in Sisson, you know, and that's it. He would have maybe a few students, and it would never, never have taken off so quickly, so fast, without him having a government position. Government backing to push his ideas. All right, so Mr. Shem, we'll see you all next week.
Yeah, but Mendelssohn and Jacobson, they match the way of thinking.
Yeah. And there was, it, it,